We would like to acknowledge that the land which we are gathered on today is the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe Nation, specifically the Chippewa Tri-Council, comprised of the Chippewas of Beausoleil, Rama, and Georgina Island First Nations, and more recently, the Mississaugas of the Credit River First Nation. Ontario is covered by 46 treaties and other agreements and is home to many Indigenous nations from across Turtle Island, including the Inuit and the Métis. These treaties and other agreements, including the One Dish with One Spoon Wampum Belt Covenant, are agreements to peaceably share and care for the land and its resources. Other Indigenous nations, Europeans, and newcomers were invited into this covenant in the spirit of respect, peace, and friendship. Most of us have come here as settlers, immigrants, or newcomers in this generation or generations past. We are all treaty people. Every day, we are mindful of broken covenants, and we strive to make this right. We commit to collaborating based on the foundational assumption that Indigenous peoples have their power, strength, and competency to develop culturally specific strategies for their communities. We are dedicated to honoring Indigenous self-determination, history, and culture, and are committed to moving forward in the spirit of reconciliation and respect with all First Nation, Métis, and Inuit people.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Beyond the Stethoscope, the podcast where we delve into the heart of hospice palliative care. My name is Lori Gill, and I am the education specialist at North Simcoe Muskoka Hospice Palliative Care Network, and I will be your host today as we explore the topic of medical assistance in dying. With us today are two remarkable guests who bring valuable perspectives to our discussion. Julie Leighton-Phelps, who is a palliative pain and symptom management consultant, and MJ, who has developed a support group for survivors of MAID. Join us as we create a safe space to share, reflect, and connect, honoring the diverse perspectives of those impacted by this deeply human experience. Whether you're directly involved or simply seeking understanding, we invite you to journey with us into the heart of love, loss, and the choices that define our lives. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thanks, Lori. Thanks for having me. This is the fourth installment of my yearly MAID series. This year, the focus is on the family, caregivers, and friends who are part of the MAID process with their loved one. Today, I have MJ with me, who has personal experience as a caregiver to her boyfriend, Mark. She has taken her personal experience of participating in the MAID process as a caregiver and has developed support groups and for survivors of MAID, as well as other resources. And I'm really looking forward to hearing your story, MJ.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here and share it.
To begin, I just want to delve into a little bit of theory and my previous clinical experience with medical assistance in dying. I had worked for a home care agency, and I have attended over 30 MAID deaths over the last 6 years. I had participated in conversations with patients with and without family members present who are just inquiring about MAID, where to find information and the process involved. A few of those patients did explain in general why they were wanting MAID, or at least to find out more about it. Several of these patients were living with cancer or end-stage respiratory diseases who were exhibiting symptoms that they did not want to live with much longer, or they were fearful of what the end was going to be like based on their particular disease, for example, pulmonary fibrosis. Most of my interactions with patients having MAID were the day before and the day of the procedure to assist the doctor in the provision. The day before was to check the supplies, do a vein assessment, and answer any last minute questions. More often than not, the patient was content with what was happening the next day, while family and friends had a variety of emotions. These included worrying about whether or not the IVs will be started without much difficulty, to relief that their loved one will no longer be suffering, to sadness or grief about only having one more day with them. On the day of the procedure, it may just be the patient and one or two others, or it could be 10 or more people in attendance. Sometimes there is food, drinks, even alcohol at 10 a.m. or music, like a party, while other times it is a very quiet personal affair. The mood and sense of feelings in the home, hospital room, hospital environment, or retirement or long-term care homes is very variable, depending on the circumstances. The majority of procedures I attended, there was laughter, crying, reminiscing, saying of final goodbyes and hugs. The patients were all ready to proceed with family support. After the procedure, the maid survivors, the family and friends were sad, crying, relieved, and wondering what happens next. Many leave right away to start their bereavement process on their own with family. Some stay for a while until the funeral home comes. Everyone's reactions, thoughts, and experience is quite individualized. Wishing to know more about those feelings and emotions experienced, especially by family and friends throughout the whole process, including from time of diagnosis to MAID date and afterwards, I bought and read the book, The Many Faces of MAID, What to Expect When Someone You Know Chooses Medical Assistance in Dying, written by Cynthia Clark and Carol Cram. Cynthia supported her husband through his terminal brain cancer and ultimate MAID death. Since then, she became a volunteer with Dying with Dignity Canada, Bridge C14, and MAID Family Support Services, while also giving presentations about MAID and end-of-life choices, and has led MAID loss support groups. Carol thought a support book would be beneficial. She and Cynthia connected. The book was published in September 2023. Information about the book will be posted on our website with the podcast. In reading this book, there are different chapters, beginning with the participant's previous death experience to the time of diagnosis, first conversations about the possibility of MAID, approval to the days leading up to the procedure and afterwards. They interviewed 17 family and caregivers throughout their journey with their loved one. Lots of common emotions and feelings were identified in this book that were also common throughout the different stages of that journey, but the individual experience was truly unique. Some of the 65 emotions that the book had listed include, but certainly not limited to, fear, anger, sadness, being overwhelmed, happy, relief, lonely, disconnected, love, peace, stress, worry, hopelessness, resigned, and heartbroken. Now, often with emotional experiences, many people will develop physical symptoms. And some of those were feeling ill, like having the flu, run down, achy, dizziness, lump in the throat, headaches, muscle tension, chest tightness or pain, shallow breathing, shortness of breath, fatigue, lack of energy, decreased appetite, and even nausea and vomiting. This book also, in summary, labeled some issues or concerns. And some of these include little to no support for the patient and family, either together or individually, how to explain what was happening to their family and friends, the general lack of information, no support after death of their loved one, didn't know where to turn for help, lack of services for MAID and support in some rural areas. No matter how prepared you can be, they felt truly not prepared. Lots of grief, but very little specific to MAID. Traditional grief counseling not always work for the particular aspects of MAID. Lack of awareness of support before, during, and after the MAID process for the patient and the family. And fear of being judged. So, MJ, can you give us a brief history of your MAID journey with your loved one in the beginning stages, focusing on your and your loved one's initial feelings?
I certainly can. Back in 2020, the beginning of the pandemic, actually, my story kind of starts there. My partner had stage 4 terminal cancer. He had had, it started off as esophagus cancer. He was told in October of 2019 that he was now terminal. He was handed a MAID application form to take home as part of his consideration. And beyond that, there was really not much, there was no support or discussion or assistance in filling out that application form. It was something that he had considered as an option, not wanting to suffer a horrible death or have any family members or loved ones witness that. But I noticed that every time I would broach the MAID application form, he found it very difficult to proceed, even though it was in his wheelhouse of wanting to do. And that's was stunning for me that, you know, in the beginning of the journey that you'd be handed an application and sent home and then fill it out on your own, pick a death date, very overwhelming. And I think in the end, that's what he really grappled with was he wanted to live, even though he was stage four, he had a passion for living and actually facing his own death and choosing when that would happen. He wasn't totally reconciled with that. And again, without the support for applying for MAID, it was difficult for him and I to navigate. I would just bring it up periodically. And again, I would see him get overwhelmed by it. And then we would leave it again. Fast forward to mid-March, he began to decline. His morphine was increased. He went to bed about March 15th. And from there, he was bedridden. He could get up and wander and go to the bathroom and that, but otherwise he was bedridden and suffering quite a bit. At this point, it became, we needed to expedite whether he was doing the MAID or not. And we were able to broach that with him. He was willing and ready to do it, seeing and feeling that he was coming to the end of his life. We had a little different experience. Again, this is back before level two was passed, and that included Audrey's Law and all that, which I'll come back to. But COVID had begun. And at the same time, the MAID teams were scrambling to figure out how could they administer MAID in the home setting while keeping the professionals and the patient and family safe. He began his video interviews with the MAID doctors to see if we could get him in and also expedite it as things on a daily basis were declining. Our whole process, the two interviews with two different MAID doctors, they took all of 3 days. And within 5 days from applying, we received a date. And in under a week, Mark took MAID. And that was quite a journey to walk. Again, COVID was in play. So how he had originally imagined it, he wanted all his family and friends, as many as he could cram into the room, to be there with him because he was a big family guy and had a lot of friends. But we were immediately told that only 3 people would be allowed in the room. So that made it very difficult with him having 2 adult children, myself and other important friends and family in his life, to have to narrow it down to 3. We had some discussions with the doctors, and we were able to increase that to 5 people, thankfully. That meant both his children, 2 of his very closest friends, and myself were able to be in the room at the time he did MAID. The other difficult part with that is the doctors had to come in looking like they were aliens from a space movie. And Mark at the time was, you know, in the throes of the cancer, and a lot of morphine was being given to him. We also had, at the time, we didn't have protection. We didn't have masks. A lot of us stood in there vulnerable while the doctors were all dressed up. That was a very difficult thing to navigate, especially. And some of his friends, thankfully, fought around it, and they stood outside his window. He had a first floor apartment window, and they stood outside, and they had music playing, and he could see that they were still there for him. The most difficult part in the MAID process for us, and this again was before Audrey's Law passed, and that was they had to have clear and coherent consent right up to the moment they were ready to deliver the MAID. And unfortunately, with the amount of morphine he was on, they were concerned about his ability to be able to do that, and the doctors be able to also ethically feel that they had a clear and conscious yes to proceeding with the MAID. So I got a call from a doctor at 10 o'clock the night before his procedure telling me that in the morning I would need to pull him off all his morphine. Instantly, my heart dropped to my stomach because at the time he was on a morphine pump. He also had a port where I was delivering extra morphine when he was in extra pain. And I knew that taking him off the morphine was going to cause him to suffer tremendously until he received his main procedure. The doctor told me that this would have to happen and that there was no other alternative. When I hung up the phone, I was just distraught because my whole night had changed. It went from, I'm just going to try and enjoy my last evening that I have with him and make him as comfortable and happy as I can, to, do I tell him that in the morning I'm going to have to pull his morphine and prepare him for that? And then he spends the whole night worried about how much he's going to suffer the next day. At the time, I had to make a decision, and I felt it was in his best interest not to be aware of that and suffer all night with that knowledge. If I could go back to that, I would probably do differently. That was difficult with Mark because he couldn't speak. He had a little box in his throat. I forget the name of it right now, but he was at the point where he could no longer speak. He could only gesture with his hands and his eyes, but made conversations very difficult to have because they'd be one-sided. And also with the amount of morphine and his body dying, I just didn't know if that was going to come across right to him and clearly. So I just made the decision to proceed that evening and try to spend as much quality time with him as I could before the morning, but it definitely changed how I went into it and how I thought it was going to be. Fast forward to the next morning. I remember it was a beautiful sunny day like today. And I remember seeing the sun come up and thinking this is going to be his last sunrise. And then I had to look at him and I had to say, I have to shut off your morphine. And the terror in his eyes is something that haunts me to this day. They just went wide, and you could tell that he understood what I was going to have to do, and he also understood what that was going to do to him and the extra suffering that he was going to endure. I had to proceed to do that. That was traumatic on me, and that led to some complex, grief and trauma for me after the maid procedure had been done, that I didn't realize it as I was walking through. You're just, it was a, I didn't even know anybody else who had done maid or had a family member who had done maid. I literally had nobody to turn to. The medical doctors and the professionals at the time with maid were doing the best they could, also in extreme circumstances of COVID happening. So, they explained the procedure medically to me. Beyond that, there wasn't much preparation for Mark as the applicant or myself or his family members of what it was going to be like to go through a maid procedure with a family member, the feelings before, during, and after. And that's something that never left me after. So that day was not comforting. He suffered tremendously as the morphine wore off. He was in horrible pain and agony. And instead of spending his last hours comfortable with the few family and friends that he had to spend it suffering. And I can just remember thinking, this just seems counterintuitive. It's like an oxymoron that we're going to make somebody suffer more to put them out of their suffering. And I really didn't understand this, consent right before they were going to do the maid procedure. If you'd already signed off on it and said yes, why did we have to go through all this? But at the time, that was the law and those were the logistics and there was no way around it. When they began to administer, you could tell he was very confused by what the doctors were wearing for the COVID, why there were few people, why some of us were staying in the corner and only a couple were by him by the bed because we had to also keep distance from the doctors to keep them safe. But the moment it was happening, it was kind of like, oh, please don't go. But then I was just relieved that he was out of his suffering and pain finally and set free of that. Then as the hours and days passed, I had to quarantine for a couple weeks before I could leave the apartment. So I spent that time completely by myself, which was another layer to the story that was difficult. I did have some support. His cancer psychiatrist, who was wonderful, she did check in with me and do a video call with me the next day. I discussed openly with her how I felt after the procedure, how I was feeling angry that he had to suffer so much before we put him out of his suffering. And I could tell there were some things that she took away as a professional that she didn't know that that would happen. And it even shocked her that he was pulled off all his morphine and would be put in that kind of suffering to be put out of suffering. But again, those were the laws at the time, and we were all kind of in a learning curve. While I sat alone for those couple of weeks, I realized that, you know, there were things like I was still looking at the IV pole that I arrived to administer the drugs. I was still looking at all the drugs that had been used. There were little things that I just noted that, you know, wouldn't it be nice if the family didn't have to look at that and it was just all cleared out and cleared up for them. And as my mind began to process what I'd been through, I realized, especially when my mom, who had pulmonary fibrosis and had had one lung transplant and was looking to MAID for her future, she had asked me, how did it go? And I said, it was more difficult than I anticipated. And she was shocked. She was like, really? She said, I thought it would be a relief. I thought it would be a good experience. And I said, well, I am relieved he's out of the suffering, but we had to go through some stuff that made him suffer more. And I couldn't even talk about it at the time because I just felt alone in what I experienced. And I realized that, like when we've taken our animals to the vet to be put down, as it's called, that we feel that it's, you know, a kind, easy way for someone to end their life. And it should be. And MAID overall, the stories that I've heard as a facilitator and somebody who's helped applicants and their families going through it, there are so many wonderful stories of how people approach their MAID and go through it. But that just was not my case. So I really felt alone in my grief, and I really didn't discuss my other feelings to do with the MAID with anybody. And I was on social media one day, and all of a sudden, a MAID support grief group came up. And I was like, oh my gosh, there are others out there. So I got in contact, and it was a gentleman who, his mother had passed from MAID, and he was a teacher. And he realized, as myself, that going through MAID, there are additional things that you take on in the grief process. And each MAID experience is totally unique, like a fingerprint, even though we all share commonalities in our feelings and our thoughts and our emotions. He started a group himself when he couldn't find any MAID support grief group. And that's, I went through a 10-week grief group where we met once a week. There were about six or eight other participants. But I can remember the very first night we went around, and it was on video call Zoom because we're still in COVID times. And everybody shared their story. And there was an immediate relief in just hearing other people's stories, because I could suddenly connect with other human beings who understood what I had lived through. Even if it was, you know, different, there were still commonalities that I was like, okay, this is normal to feel with a MAID grief passing. And that was just a huge light bulb for me. So I did the 10-week course, and through doing that, it really helped me get out and talk about these things that I've been holding down. And then I was able to process them and marry them into my overall grief. From there, I wanted to get involved because I didn't want other people feeling the way I felt when I couldn't find a support group for, I think it was 6 or 8 months. And I also had thought about, wouldn't it be wonderful if there was support for the applicants right from the get-go? Like, they didn't just get handed a MAID application and sent home, but they actually received support from the professionals on how to fill out the form. What are your options? Then also extending that to the family, because The one thing I've heard almost every single person say is that when that date and time of death is given, it's a weird feeling that you're just looking at that clock and that calendar from then on. And that's what we call anticipatory grief, because we already know they're going to die and when, and we begin our grief process. When going through MAID, nobody explained that to me beforehand. And if I had that knowledge and somebody that could connect and share with me, that would have helped me tremendously. It also would have helped me help Mark, because in hindsight, you know, we just, one, he couldn't communicate, but he could understand. And there are things that I look back on that I wish I would have said or asked, but you're just in the process, just trying to get through it. And these are little, what I call beauty in the chaos. So in the chaos I went through, I can take out pieces of it and I can help others. And that's the beauty of being able to share lived experience and what you've been through. I also, to help in my grief process, when I realized how much having to take Mark off the morphine had left me with complex grief and some trauma, I heard about Augie's Law, which was part of the next phase of MAID that was going to be passed, hopefully. And that was specifically, it would address not having to give consent at the last second before receiving the MAID. That once you did your interview process, once you signed off and you'd already said yes, they did not have to have that conscience or clear and concise yes at the end. I did write my prime minister, my MP, along with Death with Dignity, and shared Mark's story of why this needed to be passed. And when that law passed, I can remember just sitting there crying from relief, knowing that no other family would have to go through what we did, and especially the applicant would never have to suffer the way that Mark did in order to be put out of his suffering in a kind way. So from there, I did join as a facilitator. This gentleman wanted to expand the grief support group. I got involved. There were only three of us facilitators, and you know, people would get in touch with us and they'd be sore relieved. They're like, you're the only place I've found that's giving any support. You know, and people would come in with the same stories about how much it helped just to connect with others and know that the feelings that they had experienced from a MAID passing were normal. From there, Bridge C14 and what is now called MAID Family Support, and by SIG out in Vancouver, they took over the grief support group. And we started to expand. We started to have drop-in groups. And then we expanded to having pre-support that applicants and their families could connect with somebody with lived experience and have calls, video calls, call to discuss anything they wanted to and ask any questions to that person, the facilitator who had been through the lived experience. And it was very powerful to watch the difference that it made for people receiving support before the MAID happened, while they were applying, or even just thinking about it. And then also while it happened, and then post MAID coming into the grief support group. So it's been amazing to see the growth of that and how many support groups there are now and resources available for pre and post MAID. And I just think it's important because MAID is such a new concept, right? I mean, when have we ever in our life known when somebody is going to die, the exact date and time? So it comes with a lot of complexities that you don't realize until you've actually gone through it.
Wow. I'm almost speechless, MJ. You know, as a community nurse at the time, I had seen that in some of my patients as well, where I'm like, you know, holding the patient because we had to cut back on their meds and the doctor starting the IV because the patient wouldn't let go of me. And when the law did change in 2021 to include the advance consent piece for track one deaths, where death is reasonably foreseeable, I was, like you, relieved, right? I wouldn't have to watch any of my patients suffer like that, let alone the families and support people having to do that as well.
Yes, and I can only imagine how difficult it is on the professionals to have to see that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Very difficult.
Knowing our job is to relieve suffering, but we have to cause suffering before we can relieve it, right? It kind of goes against the Hippocratic. It is. I was relieved when that piece of it was changed. Still lots of work, I think, just from, you know, survivors and people who may want made in the future about advanced requests and some of the other issues. But I mean, Canada is definitely one of the more proactive countries in the world doing this type of work. Now, MJ, are you still helping with the grief facilitating related to May deaths?
I have stepped away from that now. I did it for a couple of years. I did it for three organizations, Bridge to C14, Made Family Support, and Bereavement Families of Ontario.
Mm.
The last one was actually, they had just developed one, and they knew I had experience going through the grief facilitator workshop. So they asked me if I would run the MAID support for them and get it off the ground. We did do that. I'm now into doing forest bathing, guiding, which I see in future as a great implementation for families going through MAID. And that's a whole other subject. The other thing I forgot to mention was that I was originally asked to be a participant and write Mark's story in The Many Faces of MAID. I know Cynthia Clark. We became mm-hmm. friends, and we also were facilitators for the MAID Family Support. And I'm really happy that they did the book. I wish I'd had the space and time in my life at the time I was asked to do it, but I didn't. And I always wanted to be able to tell Mark's story. And I know that's something that he wanted. Before he died, one thing all his friends described him as is everybody's cheerleader. He would find what you were really good at. And he would tell you and encourage you into that place. And he said he wanted me to share his story, because if his story could help anybody else after his death, that he would like that. I consider being here and sharing his story, that Mark is still being a cheerleader for other people now. Mm-hmm. That he's not here with us. And, mm-hmm. you know, again, if I really wish his mate could have been the way that he saw it, with the family and friends and just being comfortable and having some laughs and enjoying it. And that didn't happen. But now that we have Audrey's Law passed and we have track two that we can be pre-approved, that is going to make a huge difference in everybody's world.
And the primary piece of COVID being over too, right? It was, I had attended a few May deaths during COVID, and yeah, there was very limited amount of in-person. And I remember I went to one, and we basically had the family across Canada on Zoom, kind of like the Brady Bunch show. And it's very difficult to see. And like you said, the healthcare workers had to be in full isolation gear. So to me, that, yes, I needed to protect my family and protect, you know, my patient's family and the other staff that were there, but it was impersonal. And yeah, I'm glad a lot of these changes have happened, and, you know, we can pretty much do them anywhere with several different requests of what they want, who they want, you know, to make it as beautiful as an experience as we possibly can, given those circumstances. What piece of advice, I kind of put you on the spot here, MJ, but what kind of piece of advice would you give someone who may just be starting this journey?
The applicant?
The applicant and the family.
The applicant and the family. The applicant, I would definitely say, well, to both of them, I would start off by saying that talk. Don't be afraid of talking about the fears. Don't be afraid of asking about the fears. We often think that we're protecting each other by not discussing it. And what we really need to do is discuss it. And as an app for the applicant, I would say, you know, don't be afraid to Lay out all your wishes. Ask all the questions. Remember that it's a date and it can be moved if you're doing well. To the family, I think it's very hard for them because they immediately want to help and support their loved one. Sometimes we kind of put our feelings and emotions on the back burner. I would highly recommend that you bring them forth and you talk about them. One of my biggest regrets, I remember watching the documentary, and I cannot remember her name for the life of me right now, but it was a doctor in Halifax who went, she had a progressive muscle disease, something similar to ALS. And in her documentary, she said, you know, I'm a doctor and I go and, you know, they're doing all my tests and getting me ready and that. She goes, but not one person, family or professional, has asked me if I'm scared. And that really hit me. I remember just immediately bawling and feeling guilt because I realized I never asked him if he was scared. I never, never, I almost danced around that stuff. You're trying to make things easier on your loved one. And in hindsight, I realized that if he and I, even if he couldn't communicate vocally, if he and I were able to talk about what was going to happen and how we were feeling, it would have made a big difference in how we went through it and how we came out of it. So dialogue, I think it's so important to have dialogue and not be afraid to express your grief and fears. And also, again, in the planning, you know, really think about what you'd like, what you want everybody to do, who you want to be there. But again, if you open up the communication and the dialogue, that's the biggest advice that I can give as coming from someone with lived experience, going to someone with MAID.
Wow. Very powerful. And I want to personally and professionally thank you so much for joining me today on this very important topic as an aspect of MAID that never really gets talked about. You know, we learn the government legislations and the changes that may be coming in the future. And you know, it's all about the patient and all that kind of stuff. But you know what, in palliative care, it's a very holistic approach. And family and friends and caregivers are just as important than the patient themselves. And I think this is truly an area that is lacking. I'm glad since Mark's passing, you know, we do have more supports available. And I do see a lot more work happening, like with Bridge C14 and Dying with Dignity Canada and the MAIDS support groups and stuff like that. Do you think that there's anything else that we could do or promote or...
I think it's getting it, you know, aligned and the resources there for everybody, that from the very beginning of the process, when someone is given the option of MAID, that they're also given those support places that they can reach out to immediately. I think that's important. I think it's important to have help for the professionals who do the MAID procedures. Because as we talk about, there's many beautiful stories of MAID and how it went. There's also ones that don't go well. And those are difficult, not just, you know, for the patient, but very difficult for the family members and the staff who go through them. I think having support for everyone involved with MAID is vital, and that it should be growing and it should become the norm from the moment that MAID is discussed as an option. Here's your resources. Here's your support groups that you can reach out to. And I think, you know, connection matters. It really does. If we connect and we zero in on the humanity, that we're all humans. And I'm a huge proponent of MAID. I'm glad it exists as an option for myself in my life. I look forward to the day we can celebrate where you can have a, you know, write it in your will or your medical request, right? But yeah, that's what I see going forward, is just growing that support, the support systems, and having them available right from the get-go.
Yes, I totally agree. And I, you know, it starts with the physicians as well, right? And nurses who may be looking after somebody that is inquiring about MAID, right? We know we need to know as healthcare professionals when our family and our patients ask us, where do we go for help, that we have that knowledge on say, hey, here's a bunch of resources, check them out, right? Speak to your physician, and hopefully they know some of the resources. So yeah, no, definitely room for improvements, but I think, you know, I think Canada is definitely making some strides in the whole process. So
We
anyways,
sure
Angela,
are.
I just want to thank you again for joining me today to talk about this very important topic. And we're going to have some resources listed with the podcast, and that will be on our website. Thank you so much, MJ, for spending time with
Thank
us
you.
today.
Thank you kindly. I'm really honored and pleased to be on your podcast to be able to share Mark's story and hopefully help others who are looking at it or going through it or have been through it. And I'd just like to leave with an important quote that Mark always used to tell me, and that is that tears are true. So grief is love, MAID is a different process, and it will probably become more of the norm in our society, but know that you're not alone and reach out and connect. And thank you again for having me. I really appreciate it.
And thank you to Mark for telling you to tell his story. It's important.
Thank you. He'd be smiling down right now for sure.
Well, I'm smiling right back at him.
I've got a big smile on my face. Thank you so much.
And thank you both for joining us today and sharing your insights and your story on such a deeply important topic. Your expertise and experiences are invaluable in helping us understand the complexities of MAID, especially from the perspective of families, caregivers, and loved ones. We truly appreciate your time and the work you do to those to support those navigating these challenging journeys. Thank you so much again, for both of you, for joining us.
Thank you kindly. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me again.